Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views, the place for pets and their people who love them.
Aww, he's so soft.
Come here, boy.
Here is your host, practicing veterinarian, Veterinary News Network reporter, and host of the popular YouTube show, The Web DVM, Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views. Hope everyone had a really nice Thanksgiving. Took a couple of weeks off there, but I'm back to talk to you again tonight. Going to talk to you tonight about a 2020 special that I wasn't so happy about called True Confessions. Get to that in a little bit. This is the main topic of the show. We do have one email question that was submitted by a lady from Shreveport, Louisiana, that I'm going to be addressing shortly. Just want to remind everybody, this is a live call-in show. The number is toll-free, 877-878-1435, 1-877-878-1435. If you're a little bit air-shy and prefer to submit your questions, comments, concerns via email to be addressed live on the show, that email address is comments@web-dvm.net, comments@web-dvm.net. One last thing I want to remind everybody of is that I blog a lot more than I podcast. I blog 2 to 3 times a week. That blog is available at web-dvm.net. It is my home site. There is a blog there, but it's also a huge veterinary information network where you can access a symptom checker to research signs or symptoms your pet might be exhibiting. But also you can access a vast archive of articles about pretty much any disease that's out there that your dog or cat could be afflicted with. If you want to research more information and get some accurate information, we all know that there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet and you want good, accurate stuff, web-dvm is a good place for it, and it's all free. So by all means, check it out. I also embed the podcast players on the blog, so each episode is usually associated with a blog post, so you can follow up reading on any episode you hear about that shares a close or almost exact title and read a little bit more in-depthly about it based on what I wrote. Tonight I'm talking about the 2020 episode that was aired by ABC. They, in part of their True Confessions piece that they put out that included car thieves and scandalous bartenders, they decided to include some really bad, evil veterinarians that you really need to look out for because we're out to hurt you. All right. I'm going to refute that. I'm going to address that in just a couple of minutes here. But before I do that, I would like to address our first email question from our first and only email question from Diana of Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm sorry if I didn't say that the right way. I'm not a Southerner. I live in Florida, but originally from New Jersey. I believe in Louisiana. You say Louisiana, right? So whatever the case, pardon me for my lack of correct pronunciation. Here's what she said. Dear Dr. Roger, my dog came up positive for heartworm disease in his most recent yearly visit, but last year he was negative, and I know for certain he got his heartworm prevention tablet once a month religiously. I did not miss one single dose. I buy 12 months of Trifexis at a time, and every dose is accounted for. Roscoe is my only dog. My vet is recommending heartworm treatment with a drug called imidacide, which I have researched, and it seems pretty toxic. My own vet acknowledged that there are potential side effects. I want to do the right thing for my dog. He is a four-year-old golden retriever and stands to have a lot of life ahead of him. I'm struggling with what to do. Please give me your opinion. Thanks so much. Love, Diana. Diana, thank you. This is a very important topic. Heartworm disease is going to be very prevalent in Louisiana. It's very prevalent here in Florida. In fact, Florida, where you are, the heartworm capital of the world. not the world, United States. Heartworm capital of the United States. We see a ton of it here. We get no mosquito relief, depending on where you are in the state. I mean, it's certainly worse in central and southern Florida. I practice in central Florida, and so we see a lot of heartworm disease here. It is transmitted by the bite of a mosquito. And no heartworm preventive is 100%. There's no medication of any kind, really, for any disease that we can really claim 100% effectiveness. So could one have slipped through the cracks? It's certainly possible. But if you're really convinced that you were vigilant, and last year your dog came up negative, because of the pre-patent period, meaning the period from infective larvae to adult worm is 6 months, so there could not be an adult worm in your dog's system for 6 months from his last heartworm test. So he's maximum positive for 6 months, really, realistically. If he had one slip through the cracks, which can happen, I want to say, depending on what you're using, Trifexis is very good. I want to say like 96% of the time or ish. Don't quote me on that, but ish. It's going to, if you're giving it at the, recommended times every 30 days, that's going to be a situation that, only 4% are going to slip through the cracks. Well, that happens sometimes, and I've seen cases like that, but I don't necessarily make that assumption. I think, number one, I would not jump to the imidacide just yet. That is an arsenic. And yes, if your dog is heartworm positive, for sure, I would definitely go that route. You want to clear those worms, because even if there's one or two, they're going to do damage to the cardiac muscle, to the septal walls. They're going to cause damage to the valves, and they're also going to cause damage to the pulmonary artery, which is the blood vessel that communicates between the lungs and the heart. And they're also going to damage the lungs. They do spend some time in the lungs. It's just a bad thing. Even if you continue with heartworm prevention and go for the slow kill approach, where you're hoping to sterilize the worms by continually giving heartworm prevention and not allowing the babies to reach any relevant stage of development, you're still talking about those adults floating around there causing their damage for 3 to 5 years. Your dog's only 4 years old, so this is something I would not take lightly. So I had a golden retriever, same scenario. The owner was vigilant with her heartworm treatment, and the dog came up positive. Great dog, great people. Because the dog was negative the year before, what I decided to do, and this is what I would advise you to go back to your vet to talk about. We all have our different realms of experience. I don't want to say your vet is wrong. I don't think he's wrong by recommending what he's recommending, but what I would do is retest in 6 months. And I would do a heartworm antigen test sent out to a lab, not an in-house SNAP test, because, we do the SNAP tests. Those are really good and highly accurate. But this one I'd want sent as immunology to a lab, costs about the same, and you're getting an actual laboratory to back it up. I wouldn't do that right now. I would do that in 6 months. If the dog comes back positive again, if Roscoe is still positive, then I would go ahead and do the imidacide. Most of the time, we don't have major issues. I've treated a lot of dogs for heartworm disease in the last 9 years that I've been a practicing veterinarian here in Florida. And I've only had maybe five or less adverse complications in well over 100 dogs that I've treated. All those complications minus one have turned out really well. One actually did die from the treatment. It was a little Chihuahua. That Chihuahua had been positive for years, though, and was already showing signs of heart failure. So, that was a very special circumstance. I wouldn't, be too scared by that, but I'm just kind of telling you my statistics. By and large, it's very safe, especially for dogs that are carrying a relatively small heartworm load. So that's my advice. Continue with heartworm prevention. Trifexis is a great product. Do that monthly. There's no reason you can't do that. And retest in 6 months, and if your dog comes up positive, then go ahead and treat. Also, contact Elanco, the pharmaceutical company that makes Trifexis. If you can prove that you've purchased the correct amount of Trifexis in the period of time that your dog got infected, there is a very good likelihood that they'll pay for the treatment. I know it can be expensive. We want to take chest x-rays and blood work beforehand. Sometimes there's follow-up blood work. There's follow-up visits. The injections are not cheap. You know, heartworm treatment here in Florida, I'm not sure what it would be in Louisiana, but, you know, can cost anywhere from $500 to $700. So, you know, you might be able to get reimbursement for that. So certainly look into that. Thank you very much for taking the time to submit. That was a very relevant question, and I do thank you kindly for thinking of us and trusting me to give the second opinion. So let's talk about 2020, ladies and gentlemen. 2020, I thought was a very responsible, you know, heretofore, thought it was a very responsible news outlet, a news outlet that I could trust in terms of their stories. And then a story about my profession came out that I found the reporting was not only careless and irresponsible, but very misrepresentative by and large of who and what most of us are in this profession. Not sure how many of you watched it, but I heard enough of my own clients that watched it. You know, a lot of people watched 2020, watched ABC, saw the reporting, and, you know, a lot of people dismissed it because, you know, they have had many years of relationship with me and relationship with my associate doctor, Dr. Fogelberg, and other people who've had relationships with other veterinarians for many years and came to trust them, know them, and really get to know them and understand that all they wanted was the very best of intent, or all they really intended was the very best, and they were very honest and wanted to do right on all accounts. It really, of course, we need to make a living. We need to charge for what we do, but really not, that wasn't the guiding principle that got us into this in the first place. So talk about what they talked about. The title story was True Confessions. True Confessions included car thieves. Also included scandalous bartenders. Bartenders that if they got upset with a client, or not a client, but a customer, that they rubbed them the wrong way or stiffed them for a tip or whatever, put Visine in their drink. I guess it makes people throw up. Even if they're not, you know, sick from the alcohol, they'll just instantly vomit from the Visine. I don't know how true that is, but supposedly that's something that bartenders do. I never heard of it before this special. And now that it's actually, now that I understand how 2020 works and how really responsible they are in their reporting, I don't even know if that's even true, but whatever the case, in this they included veterinarians. And they said, be careful of your veterinarian. Because your veterinarian is looking to scam you. Your veterinarian is going to recommend procedures, is going to recommend workups that aren't necessarily, especially when it comes to dentistry. So before I get into how careless their reporting was, let's talk about veterinary medicine for a moment. So there's 28 veterinary schools in the entire United States, 28. In contrast, there's 144 medical schools. So what you're talking about is a much smaller pool of students that get accepted to veterinary school as opposed to medical school. So that translates to a much higher level of competitiveness in terms of trying to get into veterinary school. In fact, a lot of veterinarians end up having to go overseas to do their studies because of the competitiveness. I mean, we're talking really good candidates that would probably get into medical school that have to go overseas. They can't get into United States veterinary school because it's so competitive. There's only 28 of them, again, as opposed to 144 medical schools. Now, those of us who are veterinarians, like me, and those of us who have friends and associates that are medical doctors, like me, one of my really good buddies from high school, is a human orthopedic surgeon. And, you know, I know other medical doctors. And what we know very clearly and what we knew before we got into this, you know, you understand as you're pursuing a career what the average salaries are. We make probably a quarter of what a medical doctor would make in by comparison. Of course, that's a general number. You know, some of us become practice owners and entrepreneurs in different ways where we, you know, go down other avenues and monetize our profession. But you know, on the average, we make about a quarter of what a medical doctor does. You know, and by medical doctor, I'm talking about doctors that treat humans. And I'm not just having any saying anything poorly or negative about medical doctors. I have great respect for them. In fact, like I said, one of my very best friends is an human orthopedic surgeon. It's a huge responsibility, and I have the utmost respect. But what I'm trying to get at is, if money was our primary motivating factor, any veterinarian would have had a very easy time getting into medical school. Right? You see what I'm saying? If we got into veterinary school, we would have had no problem getting medical school because of the credentials necessary to get into veterinary school is so high that any of us really could have gone to medical school if money was our primary motivator. Clearly, it's not. So for me, I mean, I think I've told this story a few times on the air, but I'm going to tell it again because it's a great story, really quick. My first dog was a little Cocker Spaniel named Waldo, but Waldo wasn't my dog. Waldo was my brother's dog. I have an older brother. He's 3.5 years older than me. My brother was, I think it was like a Christmas present for him, something like that, for getting good grades, and he also made his first Holy Communion that year. We were Catholic, and that was a big deal. So between first Holy Communion and Christmas, you know, my parent, and he was a good kid. My parents rewarded him with a dog. Well, my brother's a good guy. He's a good kid. But the novelty of the dog quickly wore off, but it didn't for me. I fell in love with the dog. And pretty quickly, Waldo became my dog. And everybody acknowledged that, including my brother. And to this day, my brother still says, yep, Waldo was your dog. And my motivation for becoming a veterinarian started with Waldo because I was just a little boy. I was maybe 4 years old. And Waldo got into the garbage and ate a bunch of chicken bones. Got all jammed up with chicken bones, and he was vomiting, and he was so sick. So sick, he could just barely get up. And he went in to the veterinarian, and the veterinarian took x-rays and realized that mostly he was jammed up in his colon, was able to sedate him and pull the bones out of his butt manually. And Waldo came home feeling better, doing great, and I witnessed this guy in a white shirt, you know, a white lab coat with a stethoscope around his neck, save my dog, the dog that I loved. He was my best friend in the world at the time. And I saw that happen. And then 2 years later, there was a grease fire in my mom's kitchen. We're very lucky our house didn't burn down. But the grease fire, in the process of trying to put it out, the grease splashed on my dog's rear end, Waldo's rear end. And he was pretty badly burned near his butt. And I remember him running out onto the front lawn, rolling around, crying in pain, and I was just devastated. I mean, I think of it now, and God, what an awful sight to see. My dad scooped him up, went right to the veterinarian, and again, they gave him a pain injection. He felt better. They gave us a topical ointment for his burn. The burn healed, and just a tiny scar was left that he kept forever, but, you know, for the most part, Waldo did great. And then that was the second time I saw this same guy save my dog. And that's all I saw as a child, and I thought, I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy that saves doggies for all the little kids that love their doggies. And then, of course, through the years, we got a kitten and a cat. We fell in love with the cats, and little by little, I realized that just it's not just dogs, but it's cats. It's all animals that are very special, and they deserve people to be their advocate. Of course, advocate was not the word that was coming up in my brain in my childhood, but that's really how I felt, for the most part, to paraphrase. So that's my motivation. If you ask any veterinarian that I know, and I know a lot of veterinarians, It's a very small little club we have. You know, it's not exclusive. We just kind of run in the same circles. We run into each other at conferences, local meetings. We share clients that you know, we have mutual clients because of proximity of, you know, whatever. You talk to any veterinarian that I know personally, every one of them has one of those stories that motivated them to become a vet. Now, of course, with that comes a love of science and also a natural ability and intellect in science and mathematics. So it's not just, oh, I love animals and I want to save animals, because you have to have some ability to do that. So you got to love all these things. And in the end, what you have, for the most part, is a fairly honorable, highly intelligent person. And I'm not sitting here trying to toot my own horn. That's not what I want to do. That's not what I try to do. I'm actually tooting the horn of my colleagues and the people that I've worked alongside with and know the quality of individual they are. So when 2020 comes out and is putting us in the same the same report as car thieves and scandalous bartenders that are putting Visine in drinks, it upsets me. Because that is not what our profession represents. It's not what we do. It's not who we are. The person they used as their expose piece was a guy named Andrew Jones, who's a disgraced veterinarian. He actually was forced, he's from Canada, he's a Canadian veterinarian, who was forced to surrender his veterinary license. So this guy is no longer a practicing vet. He's a disgraced vet. He's a bad vet. Are there bad vets out there? Absolutely, of course there are. There's bad apples in every profession. I'm just saying that's not the norm for us. And then they had a couple of two different dogs that came into a vet, and the vet was recommending dentistry. And they had this idiot, really an idiot, saying that, look, see, they're recommending dentals for these dogs, and if you can see on the camera, they don't have any periodontal disease, and really you don't need to be doing dentals if there's no periodontal disease. Well, first of all, a camera view, and the camera view that was offered on this 2020 special, you cannot say with any degree of accuracy that there was no periodontal disease. You cannot see the subtle lesions that you might see in the gingiva or the gums. You cannot see with any certainty that you might see some recession along some of the gums, and especially when you're talking about stage 1 and stage 2 periodontal disease. There's no way you can see that necessarily from a camera. From a camera, you might see stage 3, stage 4. The worst you can have is stage 4. So now you have a horrific amount of crud on the teeth, that crud being tartar. You have gingival recession and gums that are bleeding, and things are horrific. So, yeah, you might see that, but you want to wait until things are to that point that you want to do your first cleaning? No, of course not. A dental cleaning is not very costly. You just pay for the blood work. You do a little anesthesia because it's the only right way to do it. It's under anesthesia with the airway protected. It's very safe. You scale the teeth. You polish the teeth. That's not that expensive. It's not that invasive. They wake up. They go home. No different than a person getting a colonoscopy. No big deal. However, if you wait till they're stage 3 and 4, periodontal disease, lesions that you might see from somebody's hidden camera, that's when you're doing oral surgery, because there's resorbing lesions, there's bone loss, there is chronic pain, there is nerve exposure, there is bad stuff going on where teeth are toast and are a liability to the patient, causing chronic stress, chronic pain, chronic infection. Those teeth need to be extracted. Teeth extractions cost money because that's oral surgery. It is not easy to do. There's a reason, there's a saying about comparing something that's very difficult to do, using the terminology, God, it was like pulling teeth. Pulling teeth is not easy. Oral surgery is necessary. You got a 3-root tooth. It's like taking out a wisdom tooth. You got to section that tooth. You have to burr away bone. You have to sometimes spend 45 minutes on one tooth. Folks, that's expensive. That's general surgery. To wait till things are at that point where they have to spend $1,000 on a dental, that's bad for the patient. That's bad for the owner, when you could have done a cleaning well beforehand for $300-$400, okay? Save the animal the pain of the extractions, save the expense of the extractions, and things are much better. Catch them when they're stage 1 or stage 2. So I talked to a couple of vets who actually watched that special and actually saw gingival lesions on the camera. I only watched it once, so I can't, you know, I don't know where to find the archive or whatever, but didn't look back to see. But bottom line is that, you know, up close and personal view of the teeth and gums, 6 inches away versus from a camera, you know, you can't make that determination. And it's better to clean those teeth before things are bad. I'm a walking example of what happens when things are bad. After I graduated veterinary school, I was so engrossed in so many things. I'd been engaged, just got engaged to my wife. I'd moved out to Long Island, New York to start my career. Got a new apartment. I mean, just moved from University of Illinois, where I did my senior year of clinics. So much was going on. I ignored my teeth. I didn't think about it. They didn't hurt. They didn't bother me, really. But then I remember having a beer one time and watching a baseball game, and I felt some sensitivity. I'm like, that's kind of weird. And lo and behold, my 5 years of negligence for my teeth, and, you know, I'm a person who brushes and flosses and mouthwashes twice a day. Despite that, I had severe pockets. Severe pockets. I had to have thousands of dollars of dental work to deal with those pockets. I had to have my all four quadrants of my mouth numbed so they can actually take a device and scrape my roots so that I wouldn't have to have my teeth extracted. And to this day, many years later, I still have to have a dental cleaning once every 3 months so I don't redevelop pockets, because once you lose that bone, the bone is gone. So you're going to be more predisposed to the pockets. So, you know, I dug my trench, and now I'm dealing with it. I got to have a cleaning every 3 months, otherwise things could get bad, right? And I'm a person who's flossing and brushing and doing all the right things twice a day. A dog's not doing that. And, of course, you know, they are more resistant to periodontal disease than we are. Clearly they are. But not always, especially our little dogs. God, our little dogs, sometimes, you know, these guys are 2 years old. 1.5 years old, they already have their first signs of periodontal disease. It's not something to take lightly, ladies and gentlemen. The number two killer of dogs is kidney failure, and kidney failure is intimately associated with, and this is statistically proven, with kidney failure. And in cats, the number one killer of cats is kidney failure, and one of the close associations with kidney failure is the presence of chronic periodontal disease. So, you know, it's not just bad breath. And it's not being frivolous to recommend a dentistry when you have stage 1 or 2 periodontal disease. So to heck with Andrew Jones, who isn't even a veterinarian anymore. He's stripped of his license. So, you know, great source 2020. You know, they didn't bother to interview a board-certified veterinary dentist, because there is a board-certified specialty. They didn't bother to do that, because that would have completely refuted what they were saying. I'll tell you this statistic real quick. When we have stage 1 periodontal disease, we're just scratching the surface lots of times, because it's a known fact, it's a documented fact, that 40% of dental lesions are actually present below the gum line, which means that we don't see them until we've done a very thorough cleaning. And even after that, after we've probed and checked for pockets, we don't see them unless we take an x-ray. So we take dental x-rays. Dental x-rays are very inexpensive, very quick and easy to do. And that's part of what we're doing when we're doing dentistry, is taking x-rays, looking for resorptive lesions that are deep to the gum line. And a lot of these things, you know, you got to – sometimes I'll x-ray it to be sure, and I'll see, wow, that root is resorbing. That tooth needs to go. It's a threat to the jawbone, and of course a source of chronic pain and stress and infection. So anyway, that is all I have to say. Very disappointing that 2020 resorted to this, that they decided they needed to bash on veterinarians. I mean, of all people, really, again, not to toot my own horn, it is my profession, but what I know of the profession, what I know of my colleagues, this is one of the last noble professions left on this planet. To tarnish it like that is just really sad. To feel the need to tarnish it like that is very sad. Can I tell you with any that there aren't bad veterinarians out there that are looking to scam you? No, I can't tell you that, but that's going to be the vast minority of veterinarians out there in my experience. So take it for what you will, ladies and gentlemen. Just know that we're not out there, by and large, to hurt anybody. We're out there to make an honest living while helping animals and the people that love them in the process. Thank you for listening. Have a great night. I'll talk to you soon.
Taking charge of your future starts with taking the first steps. And saving up to $30 a month on Cox Internet with the Affordable Connectivity Program makes those steps easy to take, whether they bring you to click upload on your first short film or join now for an online book club. Applying is easy. See if you qualify at cox.com/ACP. Non-transferable, one per household. Application and eligibility decisions are made by the FCC.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.